This week on Our Beer Could Be Your Life, we sat down with our friend Samer Kaderi, and we talked all things hip-hop and beer. How are you doing, fellas?
I am doing pretty good. How you doing, Dennis?
I'm doing all right.
For all the beer talk we had with Samer this week and all the pods we've done this week, we've had an unusually busy week here. We are actually on to whiskey tonight. So welcome to Our Whiskey Could Be Your Life, or beer. Our beer could be your whiskey. That was good. It was a good joke when you said it, and then I just destroyed it.
Joe, what are you drinking over there?
I am drinking a Compass Box blended Scotch whiskey called, I believe, Glasgow. It's like kind of a nod to an old peaty blend. I think it's kind of in the Dewar's realm of intensity. Well, a little bit smokier than the Dewar's, I'd say. But harkening back to when like blending houses were where all those single malt scotches sold most of their stock to these blending houses that then created these house blends. So Compass Box is already kind of a blending house that makes interesting blends of single malt scotches. This is one that is kind of their entry level. It's like a $40 bottle. It's tasty. And I like it. Mm. And it's got some sherry notes behind the smoke. So it's not just smoke. How about you, Dennis? What do you get?
I have a Green Spot. It's a single pot stilled Irish whiskey. It's one of my favorites. I'm all about the single pot still. It's like the traditional method of distilling in Ireland. And Green Spot in particular is really, it's got a lot of green apple notes. A lot of those green apple esters that we do sometimes see in beer that in lagers in particular that aren't fully done fermenting.
Yeah, acetaldehyde, man.
Exactly. It's great, isn't it? But yeah, it's fantastic in whiskey. It's not so desirable in beer.
What I think is interesting about that is that the pot still portion of it, so pot still versus a column still, and this is a loose understanding of it for me, but pot still doesn't do as refined a job of taking the base spirit, or they call it beer in whiskey production,
they do,
the base spirit, and then the base beer, and it leaves more of the original fermentation character of whatever you're distilling in it. And so it's a rougher distillation, but you get more like character of fermentation. So you can get like, I don't know if this one has it, but sometimes they have like banana, clove kind of things you also would recognize in beer,
which is
real fun.
This one does not have any of the banana or clove. But yeah, you do sometimes get that. And it's a less efficient method of distilling, but it's the best. It's just the best way to do it, you know? This bottle usually goes for like $80 a bottle, but I found one for $55 on sale, so I snagged it.
Nice. Good catch.
Oh yeah.
Are you drinking out of a vessel of note, or just a tasting glass?
Just a Glenmorangie tasting glass, a Speyside, a really inexpensive Speyside single malt that I'll get when I'm not looking to shell out $80 for Green Spot or $50 for Redbreast.
Cool.
But yeah, just some little tasting glass. What about you, Matt? What you got?
I have one of these, you know, Scotch whiskeys, Glencairn, Speyside 8-year that I picked up when I was in Scotland, when I took back a handful of scotches. So it was just the first one I grabbed, which I'm showing to a camera that no one of our audio friends will ever, you know, be able to see. But yeah, so it is not very peaty for the scotches that we picked up. It's probably the least peaty. It's also the palest of the scotches I've ever seen. It's just very like, you know, kind of wood. It's very wood and burn scotch taste, which I like. It sounds like that's a negative thing, but I just like that, like, just drinking a, you know, oak slab, basically.
Nice. Yeah. Well, whiskey does start its life out as beer. So there is a connection there. And then they, you know, they take the wart, which is the same wart that we have, and then they throw it through a still, and then put it in oak.
Keep on cooking, baby.
Keep on cooking. That's the delicious difference.
Yeah, and along those lines, we had a really great conversation with Samer, and then we kept on cooking because we lost the first conversation we had with him thanks to technology. And so we did it again.
I was going to make the same joke, but you kind of just beat me to it.
Well, that's just because we're becoming pro at transitions. That's just what's happening.
Seamless transition.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone can kind of tell we are all pretty tired. We having to redo stuff and then get it back in there. Just we have hit that sort of wall of like talking to each other where we're just like, ugh, you guys again.
I think you're saying the inside part outside, because that's not how I was feeling, but thank you for sharing now. I was excited. We just recorded one. We get to talk again.
It's fine. We'll edit all that out. It doesn't matter.
Fix it in post.
Take this sarcasm and just shove it down. I'll just shove it down.
Oh man. Well, we talked to hip hop for the first time with Samer, really. At least the first time in this pod. I mean, we discovered from talking to Samer and from talking to each other that we all have like little bits and pieces of hip hop that we've gotten into or have wormed their way into our tastes over the years.
Wu-Tang is for the children.
Yes. So you can make that reference. And I first could make references like that from Wugazi, which was the mashup years ago of Fugazi and Wu-Tang, which was probably the first time I listened to Wu-Tang. I was like, wait, this stuff is pretty good. I just had to smash it with my favorite band for me to be like,
I see.
See, that's embarrassing to admit that it took Wugazi for to get me into Wu-Tang, but hey, we're all about deep truths.
Exactly.
I mean, I just had to hear it like 30 times at Papa Gino's when I worked there at my first job before I was like, all right, I'm getting this. I see what's going on here.
I liked when Sam was like, he seemed kind of surprised that we wanted to talk about hip hop or that we considered him a hip hop head. And then he's like looking at his music collection and be like, well, it's 90% hip hop. And I have interviewed all these rappers. I do love hip hop. Like, yeah. See all these things. You are our guide, our spirit guide.
I mean, I think the benefit of that second conversation with Samer is we really like got to just talk about the specific things that really we felt like related to hip hop that we probably rambled on the first time, and we were very concisely ready for it for some particular reason this time.
Yeah.
It's like you did a first draft or something.
This is going to be a new part of our process. We're going to interview everybody twice, but just ask them the same questions.
Perfect. Yeah.
Now you're ready. You're ready for the genius of our interview process.
Exactly.
You know, my understanding is, and these are crib notes from memory, but I think Samer's name means the one who tells stories at night. And I think that's on his website. And he is like a guy who can like thread these connections. And so it was a joy to talk to him twice, even if we did cover some ground. And this time, I don't know if you've gotten a chance to listen to it yet, Dennis, but we talk about how we did talk about this before. Nice. You can be like, well, we did say this. I'm like, yeah, but none of you can hear it. So
breaking the fourth wall, if you will.
Oh, there is no more fourth wall. We're on to the fifth now.
It's a classic flashback episode to an episode that doesn't exist as far as everyone else is concerned.
Yeah. It's the opposite of whatever meta means.
Yeah. It's like an inside joke for the three of us.
Yep. That's true. Mm. And I enjoyed every moment of it.
Yes.
So yeah, this is Samer. This is our buddy. And I think we said at the end of the first one, which is destroyed, we said, we'd love to have you back. We immediately had you back. Thank you for coming back. And I think we're going to end this one saying we should have him back a third time.
to pay a couple respects to the people that made me what I am today.
It's all my love. It's all my love. The quiet mind. It's all my love. It's all my love. Dopamine, Jim. It's all my love. It's all my love. It's all my love.
The brain.
It's all my love. It's all my love.
Hey, Bobby.
Let the bass go.
Well, I think we have to welcome back our first return guest who's never been on the pod before.
It's very true.
Samer has joined us before, and due to technical difficulties of the modern era, he joins us again. And so he's actually going to speak to our pre-recorded voices from before, and we're going to be here, but we're going to see if he can sync up with our previous question.
You can't say that. People are going to think that's true.
Okay.
But no, to be honest, it's not the first time I've re-recorded a podcast. Not due to technical difficulties, but my collective podcast with Good Beer Hunting was recorded before my piece got published. So we kind of were like having a podcast without the completed piece. And that piece changed dramatically after, you know, I sent in drafts and edits. So, but I'm glad to be back on this one. I love this podcast.
Well, thanks for coming, man.
We're glad to have you back.
When we talked last, we talked a lot about hip hop and beer. I think it would still be fun to talk about that and talk about what you're drinking and talk about what you're reading and writing these days. But
yeah, hey. It's funny because the last we spoke in that podcast, one of the questions you and Matt prefaced was like, I don't know. Essentially, I was comparing SoundCloud rappers to craft breweries in the present day, saying that, you know, these new SoundCloud rappers or mumble rappers, how they're kind of breaking the mold of what people may like or not like, or and comparing that to some of these other hype breweries. And when we finished that, I completely neglected to call out a SoundCloud rapper that has his own hard seltzer, who's Travis Scott. And that's what I'm currently drinking.
Yeah. So what is the name of that seltzer?
So the name of the seltzer is Cacti. Travis Scott has the persona of Cactus Jack, and he's done a couple collabs using that brand name, I guess.
He has the persona that existed before him as Mick Foley's wrestler, Cactus Jack.
Is that how that works?
Like, he just took another character. He's like, this is mine now. Sorry, professional wrestler that existed for 30 years, wrote 2 best-selling books. You're done. This is my thing now.
I guess so. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I don't know that much about Travis Scott. I kind of
like it. Craft breweries are always stealing other cultures without giving them credit. Travis Scott taking that back. Take something from a boring ass white guy, make it yours.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, we like in the one of the podcasts that you guys had, you were talking about, you know, intellectual property being taken. And a lot of, you know, I mean, arguably, just a lot of hip-hop culture is taken and just, you know, appropriated. And we see that whether it's like fashion or music or, yeah, beer, I guess now. So even like TikTok videos. I mean, half of those dances were done by, you know, black and brown children, and then some white girl gets famous for it.
Well, not famous on this pod because we don't have that technology, but more power to them. I mean, I think one of the things that I remember us connecting that I think since we talked, I thought more about, and something you just said reminded me of it, was the idea that like you repurpose the tools that you have access to create. So we were talking about taking dairy equipment and making a craft brewery out of it, which is part of the first wave of American craft brewers. And then comparing that to beat makers using turntables to sample and, you know, using this instrument in a way that it maybe wasn't even designed. Well, definitely wasn't designed to then create music out of it. And then like what you're saying about SoundCloud is like the next thing. It's like the next wave of technology where kids can like buy beats online or like figure out ways to do it with like programs that like come on your phone. And then all of a sudden you can become internationally famous. At the same time, I saw a headline today of some rapper, and I don't remember the name of it, but it was like, it was a review headline. It was like, this rapper sounds like he's rapping with toilet paper in his mouth. And it was like, click here for the review. I'm like, I don't think I need to.
What's that off flavor in beer? That's paper towels.
That would be oxidized. I'm gonna blank on the name of it right now. Trans two non and all.
No, but I mean, again, like I think the thing with hip hop just as a genre is that it's always been revolutionary, and like in terms of, again, just like the build of the culture does, again, even get appropriated by like when tracing kind of the overlap between hip hop and beer, you do have like college rap, backpack rap, frat rap, right? Where now it's like they're actually white rappers that are talking about doing keg stands. There's like we've talked about it before, Post Malone is now like a product placement for Bud Light. Then again, there's also like other rappers like Fish Scales from Nappy Roots, who's really invested in craft beer and is like a home brewer. And then there's other collabs that are actually kind of cool, like the Run the Jewels collabs and stuff like that. So
yeah. Didn't Fish Scales and those guys in Nappy Roots, I remember that they showed up for a collaboration at Against the Grain. Because we're friendly with those guys, and I saw they were like actually there brewing the beer with them. And I think that where they are, they one of them is opening their own brewery, right? Or they as a group are opening their own brewery.
I think Fish Scales does most of the collabs. They definitely have a collab with Against the Grain. I'm not sure if he's opening his own brewery, but that would be sweet. But yeah. You know, there, I guess we've mentioned before, like the reason why you guys wanted to interview me was not kind of a history of the overlap of beer and hip hop, but you know, and going over it in this podcast will not really do justice, but there is a really rich history, you know, going back with 40s and, you know, Ludacris has his Chicken and Beer album. People Under the Stairs was one of the songs.
Yeah.
Their song, I think it's called Beer.
It's called Beer.
It's called Beer, yeah. And
that song was one you shared in the lead up to the podcast and was the one that really kind of like, for me, it was, there were so many references in that that were so like deep craft beer that were not like, they were just not what you'd expect to hear in that setting. Not what I expected to hear when you're like talking about Arrogant Bastard name checking Stone and like talking about pony kegs. And I'm like, this is, they're speaking our language here. And I really, it got me thinking about why more of that hasn't happened in the past outside of, you know, individual occurrences of that. Cause I do think that beer is, you know, in its ideal is a beverage where that it intends to be for everyone, intends to be welcoming, you know, whether or not the craft beer community lives up to that standard is up for debate, but it's supposed to be an everyman beverage. And I think at its core, hip hop is supposed to be like this kind of, well, I don't know. I don't know that I should be defining it, but it does seem like something that is an everyman kind of musical language that does allow there's low barriers for entry for folks.
Well, similar to beer, it's not there's not necessarily low barriers for entry, but there's different styles. And you know, it's funny, like that music video for beer, they like I think they shot it at the Odell, like they're on like the canning line. Like, and rest in peace, Double K, passed away pretty in the past few months. But you know, again, going back to kind of genres of hip hop and crossover genres, Beastie Boys could be a barrier or like a entryway for some people into hip hop. And again, compare like Brass Monkey is a song about beer, but yeah, there's other, like the same way that some people don't like beer or certain beers, or they find love in one style and then they go into another.
I think we should unpack that Funky Monkey for a second. you name checked it. I'm looking off screen at the Beastie Boys book. Beastie Boys, obviously, they meld punk rock and hip hop in a way that that was pretty unique. And definitely, as you said, brought hip hop to a whole new audience. I probably have to say myself included, I think Hello Nasty for me. I had to name check that. But is it just orange juice in a 40? Like you drink part of the 40 and you replace it with orange juice?
Yeah.
Yep. That's a Brass Monkey. Is there, do either of you know that there's a ratio that's required?
I think it's probably to taste, but the standard was usually just drink half of your 40 and then fill it back up with OJ.
So it reminds me of the preponderance of juicy beers available these days. I feel like maybe they were also early to the juicy beer craze.
That's actually kind of interesting. I never really thought of that.
Goes more towards the Radler side than it does hazy IPAs. Let's be serious here.
Well, going back to your friends at Against the Grain, I'm pretty sure at a beer fest they were pouring orange juice, right?
They were pouring orange juice and like flour into beers to hazify their IPA, if memory serves.
Yeah, make your own hazy IPA stand, right?
That's right. That's right. you know what? One thing that I think we've done a better job in the past of is introducing why we wanted to talk to you. And I do think one of the things that's interesting about you is that you kind of have you have a background in music and art and service and beer, and you kind of have charted an interesting course along the way. So we talked a bit about it in the past, but since nobody can hear that except for us, I'm probably going to stop saying we talked about this before, because no one will ever know.
Yeah, just Dennis, just edit all of the times that all of us say we said yeah. this before. Just start like, editing, like chopping those out.
Do you yeah. want me to? Are you asking me to like kind of go over how I got to where I'm at or my passion about?
I think it would be really interesting to talk more about, how you got to be a freelance beer writer. Not that I would say you're only a beer writer, but you have been writing a lot for Good Beer Hunting and Co. these days. And
yeah.
Talk about a little bit about your connection both to beer and music.
Well, actually, thanks to this podcast, I learned that your co-host, Matt, is a huge fan of Genesee. Genesee? Why did I say Genesee?
Genesee. All right. I do love Jenny Cream Ale.
Right.
Do not edit this out.
But I actually have Matt as a source in an upcoming piece that I'm writing about Cream Ale. Previous to my writings as a beer and food writer, I was actually a music writer and kind of like an art and design and action sports writer. And previous to that, I was an architecture editor. Essentially, when I left, my first experience writing was as an architecture editor. And then I kind of left and went to Copenhagen with that experience. I wrote for pretty well-known design blog that had a pretty big global presence. And so when I went to Copenhagen to this kind of like skateboard magazine with that experience, they essentially just unleashed me on these music festivals with like a team. And I would basically be like the managing editor and writer for that. So at the time I was just like, oh, these are great festivals with a lot of amazing acts. Like, let's see who we can get. And I guess, you know, I've always had an affinity for hip hop, and those were the people that I kind of wanted to land with, and also kind of understood my passion and greediness to kind of interview them, because the magazine wasn't as established as others, but the content that we got was pretty amazing.
So does the love of beer come in Copenhagen before Copenhagen? Am I jumping the gun? Does it come after that?
It comes in Copenhagen. So, the love of beer comes in Copenhagen. I've lived in Copenhagen for like 3.5 years on and off. At the time when I was like an intern as an architecture and design program assistant for a study abroad company, we would go to Norbro Brewhouse, actually, which Sean Hill worked at. And I was there like the year or two after he left. But we had like a weekly beer club on Mondays, and that was awesome. And then Mickler had one location at the time and now has like over 12 in the city. But even like going to that festival, it's the sponsor of the festival is Tuborg. And there's just like, you know, the drinking culture in Europe is like, you know, I was basically fueled by beer during this music fest. And I would wake up at 6 a.m, go to the media tent, they used to call it media center, start scheduling the content for that day and basically scheduling the posts for that day. This was also when like social media was becoming pretty popular. And it was just like burn and turn. And it was super fun. I would fly into Copenhagen. This was after I lived there. I would keep going back to this festival to do this because I was really good at it. Literally fly into Copenhagen with a tent and a backpack, take a train to the festival, walk from the train to the festival grounds, camp for 7 days or more. I think it was like 10 days. And then pack up my tent, put it in my backpack, walk back, take the train back into the city, hang out for like a day or two with friends, and then fly back.
I imagine you just like dressed like Hunter S. Thompson, like cigarette holder, short shorts, maybe packing heat. And you're just like running around, getting fueled up on this whole 7-day experience and writing about it for some skate magazine, action sport. Like the only non-action sport is like darts, but like they're all action.
Yeah, it was wild. It was like, yeah, and then like fueled by like lager and hot dogs and just sweat and like, yeah, that's the funny thing too, is like the media center, because it's like a private section of the festival, is kind of like all the like socialites and celebrities. And I was like in the trenches. So like my shoes are all like covered in mud. And that's the cool thing too, is because I've also interviewed some amazing musicians that like, you know, Run the Jewels, their first performance was in Copenhagen. I interviewed their DJ Trackstar, and I got to hang out with Killer Mike. Coincidentally, the day that I interviewed them, their podcast, We Run the Jewels, when it came out, that was the first day it came out. I was like in their green room offering like Jamie and Killer Mike a beer, which was awkward, but they were very kind.
It's interesting the connection to Denmark, because Denmark has a kind of an outsized impact in like world brewing culture. For like, you know, you mentioned Tuborg as being a sponsor. Tuborg is, I think, now part of the Carlsberg family, and Carlsberg is an incredible incredible international brewing concern that doesn't really touch craft beer in any meaningful capacity, but in like, they were the first lab to isolate lager yeast, which was originally called Saccharomyces carlsbergensis as a result of that. And you can go and tour this campus. Did you get a chance to visit the campus when you were there?
So I've biked through Carlsberg and I've gone through the campus, but I've never actually done like a Carlsberg tour. Again,
campus is like,
it's huge. My friend actually lived in one of the like row houses where like the workers worked.
It's like a college campus.
It's gigantic. The Mickler HQ is now in that campus. They like redeveloped the whole thing. But I've biked through, you know, the elephant gates and it's amazing. It's like a little, it's literally like when you, I think things like of that nature is like what inspired Willy Wonka and things.
Seems that way. I mean, they have like all this crazy art on display. He was an art collector, the owner. And I think that he moved the art to an art museum and they just did casts of all of it, but that are on the campus, but like just an amazing campus, that had this like huge impact to be able to be like, all right, this is what lager yeast is. So you can like culture up this one thing to do it. And that like changes the whole course of like industrialized brewing. And it's all from Danish beer. And you know, you can drink Carlsberg now. It's fine. The former tagline, or maybe it's a still tagline in the US, is probably the best beer in the world.
I was going to say, I do love that tagline.
They changed it in England this past year, though, and they had a campaign for probably not the best beer in the world, which was akin to the Domino's pizza campaign of a couple of years ago. They were like, hey, it got shitty. We made it less shitty. We noticed. So maybe you should drink Carlsberg now.
Well, so the interesting thing, too, is like with that festival, they release like a festival beer in the Carlsberg portfolios, also Jakobsen's. So like the year that they released the like any IPA, New England IPA for the festival was the one year that like I stopped going and I was like, what? And they also like, I was like, this is the one beer that I really wanted to try. They also had an initiative where they were recycling I don't know if you heard about this, the piss from the festival goers. And they made a pilsner called Pissner. But that was Norber Brewhouse that did it, I think. So I actually pissed. I was like, they had like kind of these troughs and I was like, I'm going to drink my own piss.
I'm contributing to this beer.
So I just cut this one.
Yeah, I'm a home brewer. I mean, I peed in a toilet once and that became beer, but yeah, that's like home brewing.
Yeah. So...
All right, you know, that's an interesting did you get a chance to try the beer?
I tried Pissner. They called it Pissner. It was okay. I mean, I didn't taste any piss, but people say that, you know, American,
they should have dry hopped it with like so much citra so that it got a little cat pee just to like really add to it.
Oh man, yeah, 50,000 liters of urine were collected.
Well, I think a couple of years ago, Harpoon made a beer with like Charles River water.
Yikes.
It was kind of like a big campaign for like the process that went into making the water for this. I don't know. I would try, I guess I've tried Beard beer, so. That was the rogue beer brewed with the yeast beard cultivated yeast from the brewer's beard. So,
oh, yikes.
I don't yikes think I ever got right to try that. So
it was fine.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Seems like he was brewing a lot of Hefeweizen because it tasted kind of heffy, and that's a big yeast flavor.
So anyways.
Yeah. Bring us back.
Yeah, we kind of get an understanding of where the beer culture comes from. Where does the hip hop culture come from? What was your first sort of getting into hip hop? Were your parents into hip hop or was this your own venture?
I think this was my own venture. I think, you know, my parents, like, I don't really remember the music they listened to, probably just like 80s rock and like Arabic music. I think, you know, I have to thank like MTV for hip hop. And again, like hip hop just became like really cool. And my parents were very open to, you know, whatever I wanted to do. My first CD, one of the first CDs I purchased was the Dangerous Minds soundtrack, which has Coolio's Gangster's Paradise. I think that came out in like 1999-ish. You know, Redman and Method Man just did like a live IG thing. And I remember that I owned a Method Man album, his Tical Judgment Day album, also around that time. I owned Dr. Dre, the Chronic, which came out when I was in fifth grade. And I purchased it, the censored version, because we were allowed to listen to any music in gym class as we were warming up, as long as it didn't have swears, not knowing that like what they were referencing or whatever. But I just have like an affinity for hip hop. I think, again, it's interesting because a lot of like white hip hop artists that are like suburban, again, connecting the dots, there's one named Sammy Adams from Boston. It's like a lot of people, and I know you are both like kind of punk and ska heads. It's like whatever resonates of like teenage angst, whether that is like personified in this music. And I don't know, I guess like 90% of my library, I was thinking about this today because I was like, I do like hip hop, but I'm not like a huge hip hop head. And I was like, oh, I actually listen to like 90% hip hop. And I know, like, you know, I did my research for this podcast. Not like, I understand that we're not going through the history of it, but I reached out to like tons of people. Dart Adams is a very prolific hip hop writer, and he's from Boston. Drink Champs is a whole podcast about basically beer and hip hop, which is amazing. They've been pushing out kind of their DMX content. Beer Culture has been had their product placement with them. And then there's just definitely people in the beer world that, you know, are integrated in both both cultures and industries, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I think the crossover is really interesting. I mean, we started talking about Travis Scott and Cacti, but I think that there's deeper roots to be had in either culture. I mean, we keep talking about hip hop as culture and the culture, and I think it's hard to talk about American craft beer without like recognizing that it's like pretty white, you know, and it's and I mean that not that it's 100% white, of course, but like there seems to be some unconscious gatekeeping on the part of other people in our industry that I think is kind of challenging. So it's awesome to see breweries owned by people of color. It's awesome to see people standing up and voicing their opinions in the world and trying to make a better craft beer industry. And I feel like we could learn something from hip hop if we wanted to really open our minds to it. I hope so.
Wu-Tang anyway. Was for the children.
You know, there was a brewery a couple of years ago that conditioned a beer in Fooders while 36 Chambers, I believe, was played on loop for like 2 months. So it was like conditioned in the 36 Chambers. So,
oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I should have done more research about that because I cannot name the brewery, the beer, or anything else about it. I just remember reading that story and being like, okay.
It'd be cool if they had like 36 like fermentation tanks and like they called their cellar the chamber. Because again, like I know a lot of breweries that, and like if we take rap and hip hop as like an art form, it's like, yeah, you can be inspired by that. And we've, you know, mentioned the difference between like appropriation and appreciation. And that happens with like beer names and like kind of, you know, where you get influences from. And there's so many beer names that are taken from like rap verses or rap, like rappers right. themselves. You know, Oxbow has like Liquid Swords, Metal Face. You folks have Dang, which is an homage to the Mac Miller and Anderson .Paak track. And you know, again, it's really funny. Like, even Mac Miller is someone who was interviewed by Sam Calagione for some beer content. And Sam Calagione has his own, what's the name of his band?
The Pain Relievers.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, a little different than the 36 Chambers, but...
Which, after a quick Google search, was Fortnite Brewing Company did that. Bring Da Ruckus. Oh.
Very nice.
And, thank you. I think they're North Carolina, if I remember correctly. I could look that up. I also was looking at that, but now I'm just trying to remember.
Okay. You know, it is funny you mentioned appreciation versus appropriation, because it does strike me frequently when we talk about being inspired by something and wanting to pay homage to it, like where does homage stop and just straight up IP theft begin? That's a question. And I don't know if we're going to answer it on this pod today, but I think it's an interesting conversation to be had. Like, you know, for me, it's like, if you're just stealing the name of the thing and the font of the thing, it's usually like, that would be just stealing. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's funny you bring up like Sam Calagione, like for all his goofy like shit that he does, like he actually cares. And he was one of the first people that tried to tie, you know, music and beer. He always would try to do record store day stuff. So, you know, just he's someone that like I've always appreciated that he always cared about music. He put out that 45. 1 year in a beer release. So
yeah, that was the Deltron 3030. I took that out. I don't know if we were talking about this last time, but I took it out. It has like all these like actually really cool beer recipes from Sean Paxton, the homebrew chef, like on it, in addition to the lyrics. It's really like quite
that's exciting. Awesome.
Yeah, I think I lost it in one of my moves.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's a really interesting, there's so many different overlaps when it comes to hip hop and beer and kind of like writing rhymes in a notebook and recipes and like, you know, kind of there. And again, it's all kind of almost like a anti-culture that becomes the culture, which happens in punk and ska too. It's like, this is supposed to be an alternative culture. Like, beer is an alternative culture. And then it's like, here's Travis Scott's hard seltzer. You
know? I appreciate like, you.
How dare you lump hard seltzer into our beer culture?
No. Yeah.
This is the first seltzer to make the pod, I believe. Although we're going to blank out the word seltzer.
Oh my God, not this again. Okay.
How dare you forget polar seltzer? Just because it's not alcoholic doesn't mean it isn't amazing.
Okay, fair. That's what I was getting to. There was like a point in every podcast for some odd reason, there's a product placement for that, but we're not going to mention it. Though that I wrote about this company, which is funny, of all the people to talk about this subject, I interviewed this company for a piece I wrote, but we're not going to mention their name.
No, not until they pay up.
Instead, we can talk about, you know, other sponsorships like Anderson .Paak, who, you know, is a Modelo sponsor that
that's Matt, true.
Matt's yeah. drinking Modelo. I gave up an interview with him in 2017, which I will forever bash myself for missing. But, you know, it was a lesson in journalistic integrity. Essentially, his team said that I could have the interview as long as it was a cover story. And I didn't really know what that meant because it was going to be a online article, not like a printed issue. So I just was still young in my career and I didn't want to make promises that I couldn't keep. So I figured it would be better. I didn't want to end up on the like, don't talk to this journalist list.
Sure. I appreciate you have continually nodded back to our punk and ska roots. I think to translate for people who are, you know, weaned on a different fruit. But it took a while, but I have opened my mind up substantially. And in fact, Anderson .Paak was one of those guys that I'm really excited to see. Like I'm excited to see like his success, but also just like he's like such a talented dude as a musician, as a lyricist. He's stylish as fuck too, so he's got that going. And he's got that
it, really it, rubs it in your face. He's just so amazing.
But it took him a while to get there, though. He had a whole other persona that he like kind of dropped, Breezy Lovejoy, that like was like more R&B focused. And I think he like, man, I think he's just great. I'm excited for Silk Sonic with Bruno Mars. So that's how tapped into that's no longer underground culture, I think, at this point. He played at the Grammys.
But yeah, and you know, again, even we were talking about like different styles and different, there's like grungier hip hop, and like you I know are a fan of Run the Jewels, but even Ice Cube has that like metal band, and there's like a really interesting like crossover with like grime hip hop, and like now people are kind of like moshing at hip hop shows, and
I think you're gonna, I could be wrong. Do you mean Ice-T's metal band?
I meant Ice-T's metal band. I apologize. Okay.
I was, you don't have to apologize to us, but maybe just for your
just apologize your to Ice-T.
Yeah.
No, he's a regular listener. He sends me notes on every episode. So
I was looking actually at my notes, and I was seeing Ice Cube popped up under when we were talking about just kind of malt liquor, and when St. Ides, which is a malt liquor company, they would use like sponsorships or commercials with like Wu-Tang and Ice Cube. Ice-T, I think I took one of those Twitter, like what most like celebrity are you? And I think it turned out to be Ice-T. So I'm proud of that. But
well, he operates in many lanes. He can both be a detective and a cop killer. He can play both roles perfectly. So good for him. My sister, who is not tapped into hip hop at all, out of nowhere was like, did you know that Ice-T started a metal band? I was like, they've been around since you were born. So yes, I know. Yeah. Like, we
read a lot of body count talk on this. I like it. I like it.
Again, we're translating for the guitar heads over here.
Wait, were there more body count? Am I the first person to bring up body count, or has it been brought up before?
Oh no, yeah, I think you're the first person. I'm saying I appreciate that we're covering
we're still talking about body count.
Yeah. I was just thinking, because there was another overlap with another guest that you had on. I was like, yeah, like that sounds like,
yeah, I mean, this is I think episode 11. We're running out of content here, man. Beer and music only get together so well. So, I was gonna go, how about non-alcoholic beer? But
no, fuck. Oh, what I meant to say was, you did have, so going back to like Colt 45 and malt liquor, there was someone fact checked correctly that it was Billy D. Williams.
It was Billy D. Williams, yes. And Colt 45, including Cool Colt, the mentholated variant that is my number one white whale beer. So
is it like a Camel Crush where like you like can halfway through like,
I mean, we could probably get like a mint rim for like, you know, your Colt 45.
I have nothing productive to say about that. I'm sorry. I would not touch that. I would rather drink a full Cool Colt.
Cool Colt. I've never had it. It's
basically the same thing.
But again, I mean, that's the interesting thing too about like who, when that product was introduced, like who were they marketing, right? Like liquor beers, like 40s, it's like when that was introduced, like that was like specifically targeted to the Black community. And that's unfortunately like why a lot of people have misconceptions of why certain people don't like beer. It's like a lot of people like beer, like beer's for everyone. But when you like subjugate people to like, you like this, you like that, then that becomes problematic.
It's a culture of like, you guys like to drink this, get drunk, and you know, these people over here are drinking the fancy stuff, and it's a very negative way to like put people into, you know, specific categories that doesn't help, you know, those people in that category. It's not going to help them, you know, want to grow out of it if there's no welcoming other side of that fence.
Yeah.
So craft beer, I think, has gotten a lot better at being welcoming, and they still need to do a whole lot more, but they're working, you know, not everybody, but a lot of people, I think, are working very hard to do that.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, we found out on our own, like, what that work is. It's not fast or fun or easy, but I hope that these conversations are happening across the country and, you know, beyond craft beer, honestly, but like, because that's what we do and that's what we think about. I think we could all be a lot more inclusive, even ourselves. And like I said, we're trying to do that work, but you know, we gotta do it while appreciating the culture that inspires us without appropriating that culture, as you said.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's interesting where even in like the taproom experience, right? It's like you can play hip hop in your tap room, but if the people that are all around your tap room don't look like the musicians that were probably singing this, then there's something to definitely take note of and work on.
Yeah. I mean, our tap room's been in an area that has a huge Brazilian American population. We have not done over the years a great job of welcoming those people. We're trying, you know, we're opening up again in about a month, and we're gonna, I think one of the plans that I can share is that there's always going to be something on the menu that's like our kitchen staff like pulls together and does a recipe that it's not just a taproom recipe. It's something that you know is something that they either grew up with or has some connection to, and are, you know, trying to welcome the people who are closest to our brewery into our space. And
that's great.
You know, it feels silly that it's taken as long as it had to get there, but like, you know, we're working on it like a lot of other people.
Yeah, I work right now as a host at Bow Market, which includes 30 independently owned and operated shops and restaurants, one of which is actually a vinyl shop owned by DJ 7L from 7L and Esoteric. And another one is actually a restaurant called Nibble Kitchen, which has rotating chefs that come in. And one of them is a Brazilian chef that makes like a very specific Brazilian street dish on Thursdays, which is the day I work. And it's amazing to see just like, you know, different people that come in and use the space than the kind of normal patrons that we have. So
I was at Bow Market the other night, and I went to Nibble Kitchen and had Bangladeshi food, which is super tasty. One of the things I noticed in being at Bow Market was not just the vendors and some of the new shop owners and the pop-up shops, but the crowd seemed to be more diverse than my first couple experiences there. And my first actual experience there, I met someone, a Black woman who is now a good friend of mine, I was basically meeting her in this moment, and she was counting out loud. And when I asked what she was counting, she's like, "Oh, I'm counting other Black people here." And she was like, "I'm at two, and I've been here for an hour."
Yeah.
I mean, it has changed.
Was that a craft beer festival?
Might as well have been, but you know, like you just said, Samer, there's like, there are vendors there now that were not there the first couple of times that I was there. And, you know, I think there's maybe something to look at there and say some evidence that like they're attracting a wider audience than they were maybe in the beginning.
Of course. And these things are very nuanced, right? But it's almost better to like address these things and get into the mess of it than to just be ignorant and ignore it, right? Like, these are things that, like, have become this way because they've been ignored for so long that it's like, all right, maybe, like, you know, we created a potentially gentrified space, but now we actually want to make sure that we're involving everyone. It's difficult. And that happens within the craft beer world as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, being in my now late 30s, thinking about where I was when I was 18, you know, I feel like I was this like rebellious, idiotic kid. But then I think about my politics at 18, I'm like, I lost my way along the way and I forgot about some of the stuff I was angry about. I just kind of got comfortable and didn't think about it. Cause I'm, you know, I'm a white dude and I guess I don't have to worry about the same shit as a lot of other people around me. And I'm like, wow, like in the past couple of years, looking back, I'm like, I think, you know, I want to look back and say I was naive, but like, no, I was just pissed off about the things I should have been pissed off about because I was being really empathetic. And then I just lost that empathy because I got fucking comfortable.
You got to follow your inner child.
Yeah.
Listen to your album. The interesting thing too is that like that album that I referred to, Judgment Day by Method Man, I haven't listened to it since like I purchased it at the age of 10 or 11. I re-listened to that album and everything stuck. I was like there was a reason, like, because I was like, there were some, again, there are some like, they, you know, a lot of hip hop can be profanic, misogynistic, and probably a bit over my head as a young adult, that I just like was into the beats and things like that or the message. But it's like it was almost like it was like that the movement of that did influence me and still does, which is why, you know, podcasts like this is like really cool, because it's like, where are these intersections of people's passions, and then where did those stem from? And as a writer, that's what I love to explore too, is that like, where, what are those nuances? Why did this person, like, yeah, what makes people tick? What makes something special?
How can, and I think that's, you know, it's interesting when you talk about that, because to rope this back into stuff you've written, you wrote a great article related to your family brewing history, even though you grew up in a household I don't think that drank, from what I remember, but you had brewing as, you know, a culture, which isn't a thing that's associated culturally with, you know, the Middle East. And I think it's very interesting that, you know, you found that you had that in your history, in your family history, let alone just the history of, you know, what's going, what that area.
Yeah, that was a cool like aha moment where you're like, oh, this was in me all along, you know, like I didn't know that, like I wish I knew that.
I was born to drink.
Yeah, well, or like it's like people need a narrative, like it was a missing narrative, and that was the thing. It was like, these are identities, these are cultures, these are like movements, inspiration. It's like, oh, the reason why you were inspired by this was this all along, like who would have known? Like I didn't, and I had to like learn, like relearn some of that history, because, you know, like you said, I grew up in a family that didn't drink. It's really interesting to kind of also like, you know, develop your own identity. Again, like my parents were very like liberal and just being like, yeah, like listen to the music you want to listen to, like do the stuff you want to do, be a writer, see how that turns out. Yeah, fly to Copenhagen with a tent. And you know, it's working out. I wouldn't change it. It's not like glamorous. I thought it would be cool. I mean, again, it's like what influenced me. I watched Almost Famous and I thought I could like be a music journalist. Cool. Why not?
I mean, we've all had that moment. We all wrote $25 patch articles to try to get by. We've all been there.
Yes, I've never gotten paid for that, but sure.
I tried to be a journalist out of college as well, and now I sell beer because it didn't make me any money.
But now you're also, you know, going back, well, you've always been a musician, but now you're pursuing music, I think more, or like more balanced.
Yeah, I mean, he's here, right? We're doing this thing. This is true. Is a form of journalism.
I'm talking about music more now in a public forum, so.
But you're also being considerate in playing too. But I think, again, I actually think that it's super cool that you and Joe and Dennis constructed this podcast. Like, I wish, you know, I'm glad I'm a part of it now, but I commend you all for getting 10 episodes in. It's super cool.
Made it past that hump, baby.
That was our entire goal, is to get to 10. Now, there was a whistle involved.
Oh, yeah. Air horn, though.
Air horns, yes. Yeah. This is where you drop the air horns right here. But, I mean, I appreciate you saying that. I think... I don't think
Joe listened to the intro yet with the amazing air horns that Dennis put in.
I thought Dennis was on, like he has, like, a soundboard, like, in, like, the studio.
No, but he put him in...
Yeah, I definitely have listened to that. I'm sorry.
Let me get a dingo in the baby, Dennis.
One dingo in the baby here. Maybe what else do we need? Maybe a little slide whistle.
Yeah, there was a slide whistle in that intro too, or kazoo. So that was the thing.
We talked about the kazoo. Yes.
We discussed that it wasn't a kazoo, although then I did bring out a kazoo.
Okay, so you did have, that was actually an in-person kazoo. Yeah.
That was, yes, that was not in post. It was a in pre situation. I think it's really, people have been very generous with their time, yourself doubly included, because obviously we're talking again. But it's really interesting to hear people's perspective on how they connect these things. And when we had our last conversation we released with Keith Kirchhoff, we were talking about the form of music, because he is a composer in classical music and in that scene. We were just talking about what the scene was, and we started talking about like the form of pop music and like how people like will go and to a modern art museum and look at like a banana taped to a wall, as we were talking about, and being like, that's art. But then people want their songs to be 2.5 to 4 minutes long and be a certain way. And like, I feel like hip hop has always played with form, like from the beginning. And so I think it's like almost, maybe now it's a little bit closer to pop culture and a little bit closer. Well, it is pop culture, but I think there's something inspiring about that. The freedom of the form, as we talk about.
I wish that was
a question. I feel like it would be a good question if I found my way to a question mark there.
These inspirations, it's like you can't go from, you were saying like my path, it's like you can't go from hip hop to graffiti, then to street art, which is what that banana, like Wynwood Walls and like the Wynwood, like Art Basel and Miami art. Like that's all street art. That's all curated street art that has roots in graffiti. And it's like these graffiti artists were train bombers and doing all that stuff. Like these hip hop artists that are talking about like, again, 40s and things like that, then get you to your Hard Seltzer, your I Love College, your, you know, even Jay-Z. Like Jay-Z is one of these pivotal like musicians, right? Even Wu-Tang, right? It's like Wu-Tang is now like recognizable by people's mothers, I think,
definitely,
or digestible in that way. Run the Jewels is a perfect example. It's like it's just tangible enough, because I remember when Run the Jewels first came out, it was like pretty hard and like not that many people knew that. Like LP was notorious for kind of being a pretty like aggressive producer and rapper, Killer Mike as well. And they still are. I mean, a lot of their lyrics are hard and sincere, but it's like, it became like, I think they use like Run the Jewels, like clipping like a Jeep commercial, right? And they have tons of beers now, which is super cool.
They have so many collaboration beers. So
32.
Do you remember reading the story about one of them, Oz? Because one of the breweries, just did a beer inspired by them, and basically like they had an artist come in, they like took the font, they like did a whole thing like very inspired by the art and the label, to the point where I guess Run the Jewels management had to reach out and be like, all right, this is so cool, but this is like 100%
yeah,
IP theft. So like, we have to figure something out here, because you can't quite do this. But I think they were cool about it, and they figured out a way to make a collaboration together. They were like,
that's good.
They figured a way to partner up. I think it was a Latinx owned brewery, and they figured a way to make it part of one of those 32 beers was that collaboration.
Nice. Yeah. So, I mean, I think, again, going back to like I studied urban planning, and then that's like, again, it's like this, it's about spaces. It's about people. It's about how people engage in space. As I don't know much about the production of music, but I know how much music influences me, and I understand kind of like the orchestration of that. And it's like the many parts make a whole, and that, you know, can be personified in so many different ways. I just saw a really interesting TikTok video just about like, yeah, be the conductor of your life. Like, you have an orchestra. There's certain literally music parts of yourself that like you can, that can take the stage as like a soloist, right? It's like, are you channeling your bass energy or your flute energy, right? Like stuff like that. A little off the cusp of what we were talking about, but things are related. Definitely music is related. The reason why I love beer is that it brings people together. The reason why I studied urban design is that like spaces are literally what brings people. Like, there's a book by Jan Gehl, who's this famous Danish urbanist, and it's called The Life Between Buildings, right? And it's like, that's the whole point of like urban spaces. One of the things that I hate about American design in America, it's like no loitering is a thing. It's like, what the fuck does that mean? And all of these like things that we, and I'm going to just speak on behalf of you, but Matt, and it's like this no loitering. It's like, no, I'm going to dance here. We're going to throw a show here. We're going to like, we're going to activate this space, because that's what it's about. It's not about, you know, staying at home, which, you know, unfortunately we've had to do a lot.
We have had to do that for a while,
which is fine. And there's other ways to connect.
You like mentioned like the like train bomb graffiti artists. Like, I can't imagine all the amazing stuff that was lost from like Basquiat and Rommelzy and like Lady Pink and stuff, just from like that, you know, mid like late 70s, early 80s, you know, culture that, you know, they were that, you know, Rommelzy did hip hop as well. So there's a lot of translation of like graffiti artists to hip hop, and then, you know, that whole culture of.
I was very lucky to meet Lady Pink and Martha Cooper actually at the festival. I interviewed Martha Cooper. She's, you know, a very prolific street photographer. She was actually the first woman, I believe, hired by the New York Times or New York Post.
Probably
documented graffiti. Well, she was documenting basically hip hop culture. Or street life. She was a street life photographer and got really into graffiti, and they like brought her in, and her whole thing, and she still like shoots it like all the time, but she carries this notion of like impermanence kind of thing. It's like the art on the wall is impermanent. It will get sun damage, whatever, someone will throw up something else on someone else's work. Like, that's part of graffiti, right? Like, it's not meant to be everlasting, and documenting it can also be impermanent. Like the, like you said, it's like you're hoping to carry on this history, but things can get lost. And again, that's like, as a writer, it's like, you know, my content can last anywhere between like, maybe someone didn't read it, maybe someone's not listening to this podcast, but hopefully it's recorded at some point, and even us having this conversation is benefiting at least myself. So
hopefully recorded correctly this time.
Fuck, if we have to do a fourth version of this, I would not know what we're going to talk about. I can't drink any more of this heart seltzer.
I have to advise those within the sound of my voice, but mostly you guys, to make sure you take advantage of the MFA's extension of the Basquiat exhibit that is there right now. In fact, Rommelsy's body is there. So you should probably go see Rommelsy's body, because that was an intense end of the exhibit. I'll leave it there, but it's fantastic.
Yeah, I've been meaning to go. It's been sold out, which is great. But the crossovers of all that stuff also happened within like skateboarding and Tony Hawk and like things like that, where it's like, okay, you can listen to punk, you can listen to hip hop, you can like graffiti, you can like skateboarding, you study urbanism.
I wish I hadn't been so obsessed with the form of punk when I was a youngin', because if I had understood the spirit and the openness that created it more, I would have been more open to understanding and recognizing that rebellious spirit outside of the form of three chord punk rock. But you know,
I was gonna say, is that like three chord hip hop reminds me of like Reichsgebot. Like, now we can tie it back into beer.
A bit of a stretch, but we'll take it. We'll take it.
Well, it was originally water, malt, and hops before they knew what yeast was, and they had to go back and add yeast as the fourth thing. So it's really like that transition from three to four chord ingredients. And again, a chord is a bunch of notes played at the same time.
Fair.
So like at least two. So maybe the Reinheitsgebot is a two chord situation.
I just think that there's a reason that all four of us had an affinity, or still have an affinity for, where you've been employed, are employed, where I have been employed. Lager is amazing. And you know, that's essentially what got me into beer, going back to Carlsberg, like drinking lager in Copenhagen, working in the front of house, learning about different styles of lager first, right? Learning kind of like those three chords to then learn about more experimental stuff.
I think lager is the form in the constrained form in a lot of ways, and the creativity you can express with a limited set of ingredients and a limited set of processes. And that's what's interesting, you know, about it. Maybe ale and seltzer and everything else is more the impressionist version of the same thing. I don't know.
There's like a rigidness to like everything that you get into. Like, there are always purists that like, you know, this is the only punk rock you can listen to, and like, you know, and then it just all deviates. Like, everything has a Reinheitsgebot to it that people just want to naysay. And then there's people that just, you know, it just branches out from there.
Yeah, the gatekeeping's got to stop.
I feel like there's like a punk song that should just be like, punk off. Like,
hey, man, you can write that punk song. That's the point of punk.
I'm going to write that punk song. As long as I don't get like, yeah.
If you do it in the next 3 days, we'll put it at the end of the podcast.
I know a few power chords.
Aren't you the lead singer of a ska band?
No, in the next life.
Right. This is the tension in our friendship, where I think it should be this life.
It could be, but you have a vocalist right now. I wouldn't mind. I'm open to the idea.
He doesn't have a ska band right now.
No. He is actively shopping for a ska band. It's just, you know, sax players
shopping for a ska band. It's not like a.
I mean,
sounds like a cool, like shop. Like, I don't know. Shopping for a ska band sounds very ska like.
Well, I mean, you as the lead singer of our ska band can decide what is and is not. Ska-like. Ska-y.
Now we're just coming to Joe openly recruiting Sammer. Let's round this back into form here.
If anybody wants to be in my ska band, just drop a link in the comments.
Sammer, yeah. I think you know how we end this since you've done it once before, but tell us a beer that you really care about that's got a great story to it.
Oh shit. Is that how this happens?
We might have changed it.
I thought you guys were getting some more like rapid fire questions. I thought that's how you did something. I don't know. I listen to a lot of podcasts, so I always forget how they end. A beer that I care about.
Got a good story to it.
I need a minute. Sorry, Dennis. I don't really have any good beer stories.
I mean, you just told a handful, so I mean, there's got to be a few more in there. You write beer stories.
I do write beer stories. And I think that's one of the things that's like, it kind of like, as you guys know, it's like, after a while, it gets a little exhausting. And I think that's probably why you have a balance of being like, where do I find influence in this product? And it tends to not be about the product itself. It tends to be about the people and the spaces where the product is drank.
That's fair. There's a reason why when I get to go to a bar again, the first beer I'll probably order is a High Life with a shot of Aperol in it.
Yeah, those are one of my favorites. I can tell you that I'm excited about going. Tomorrow I'm going to Armsby Abbey, and I haven't been in quite some time, probably like 3 years. So I'm just excited about that experience. And I know that they have, or hopefully they'll have some Hill Farmstead. And I've never actually been up to Greensboro. So like getting that beer is always like a treat. I think Sean Hill is a very interesting fellow. And I think the beers that he puts out are literally like, again, going back to kind of like textbook things. It's like, I've mentioned it in a previous podcast that if like aliens were to invade our country, and they were like,
what's the aliens beer? Are coming for the craft beer. Get Sean yeah, Hill.
Get Sean Hill. Like, give them some Hill Farmstead. Like, they'll understand. So that's something I look forward to. Other than that, you know, like, I've never had Untappd, so it's hard to be like, oh, these were the top rated beers that I like. And again, it's just because the top rated beers are because of a show that I went to and a friend like gave me the beer. Like half of the beers that I've drank that have been important to me, I probably wouldn't even know what they were.
Hey.
The other half, I'm like, you know, diagnosing them to a T. Draft lab sensory.
I love that definition of a beer though, because you're really saying that the beer is the beer and the qualities of the liquid are almost incidental to your enjoyment of it, in that like where you enjoy it, how you enjoy it, who you're enjoying it with, the story that accompanies it are all, you know, have import in the way that you like look at and you judge it.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, funny you talk about that, because like, you know, you say you haven't gone to Greensboro, but like going to Greensboro to Hill Farmstead is an adventure. And like, you know, yes, that beer is fantastic, but getting there, getting that beer is also like part of what makes that whole experience fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, if I went to, you know, if that was Hill Farmstead was on the corner of my street, I don't know if it would feel as special as if I have to go 6 hours out of my way to get it. Or even you have to go an hour out of your way to Worcester to get it. I mean, it's still it's one place has it. There's still a very special mystique to that whole experience.
Absolutely.
Well, how about we thank you for joining us for a second time. And I hope we will never be able to find this out, but I believe we said at the end of our first episode with you, we'd love to have you back again. We didn't mean to do it so soon. but I would say we would love to continue the conversation and talk form function. We didn't get to your Simpsons piece, which I should plug, and we should plug in your intro, because that came out fairly recently, and that piece was great. So
thank you. Let the bait go.
Deep, deep, deep. Diamond Eater. Call me a diamond on.
We don't make no party.